that you can act out. Come on.
My name is Carol Goldman, and I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of this congregation. We welcome all, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, factors which can separate people in the larger culture. If this is your first time visiting us, please join us after the service for refreshments and conversations. Feel free to take any brochures on UUism that are on the wall near the outside door, and please sign our guest book. People with name tags with blue dots are members of our congregation. I choose to go incognito. We'll be glad to chat with you about their experiences in the fellowship. Because our services do differ from week to week, we encourage you to come back a few more times to get a flavor of our services and our community, especially during the next few months when we'll be having a variety of lay leaders and guest ministers in the pulpit while we explore our options for ministry. Now is the time to turn off all cell phones. Parents of small children are reminded that we have child care and religious education classes. If you choose to keep your children with you, please keep them quiet and respect our need for peaceful reflection, although today I think we will be having a more boisterous service. Again, I want to welcome everyone, and we look forward to getting to know you better after the services. And actually, we have a few announcements. First, we've passed out a questionnaire about services, which we'd like you to fill out and hand in at the end of the service. And there are some people that need to make quick announcements. I'm going to come up to the... or talk loud.
There were actually supposed to be two pages of the congregational announcements, and I think only one got in. So I wanted to remind everybody that we have a circle supper coming up on April 16th at the home of George and Cindy Walker up in Brewster, right? Pauling. So for everybody who lives in that end of the fellowship world, would be a great opportunity. Call or email George and Cindy, and if you don't know how to contact them, you can talk to me later. I'm Katie Alberti. And the other thing I wanted to bring to everybody's attention is that we have the family Seder coming up at the end of the month. I think that did make it into here. And Vicki is organizing that, so you can talk to Vicki about that. So that's that for the Adult Programs Committee. I think the rest of them got in here.
Okay, Gail?
Good morning. Gail Hudson, my husband Jan, and the kid's father, is helping out with a breakfast run in Manhattan today. It's the equivalent or the other side of the midnight run that many of us are familiar with. And our coming-of-age students are going to be helping out with two breakfast runs, April 24th and May 1st. We are looking for donations of extra-large clothing, was particularly requested. Sweatshirts, underwear, any other seasonal garments. And they're also asking for donations of toiletries, of toothpaste, toothbrushes, shaving cream, etc. We need to organize this a little bit, but if you can drop things off next Sunday or the following Sunday in advance of the 24th or the 1st, that would be greatly appreciated. Thanks.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Donna Moriarty. I'm a member of the Worship Committee here at the Fellowship, and I welcome you all to a very special... you have to love a church that makes a sacred holiday out of April Fool's Day, right? You know, this is... So that's what we'll be doing today. I also just want to say about the worship service feedback form, it's not specifically about today's service. It's about the last few services that you may have attended. So we talk about them in a little bit of general terms. You'll understand when you see the questions. But do fill that out and get it back to us. The worship committee relies on feedback to make sure we're doing what you need us to do. I'm going to introduce our guest service leader this morning. And I'll start actually with a quote by Catherine Rippinger Fenwick, who said, "The body cannot heal without play. The mind cannot heal without laughter. The soul cannot heal without joy." Michael Jacoby is a longtime friend of this congregation who understands the meaning of laughter and joy and brings a lot of it to this fellowship. And in a tradition that really doesn't seem to fit a pattern at all and doesn't even happen every single year, we celebrate April Fool's Day as an opportunity for us to laugh at ourselves and our faults and foibles. And in that way, we open ourselves to laughter and joy and healing. So please sit back and relax and enjoy, and I give you Michael Jacoby.
Don and I had a couple of disagreements coming into today about the sacred space, and just so that you know, I do hold this space as sacred, and the candles of joys and sorrows will be sacred, because I know that there have been episodes this week that have been important to people, and I have to send my apologies out in advance. I mean no disrespect, and I understand that, you know, humor is not for everyone, so if you are offended, I apologize. This service or disservice. Basically, I came to because of my inability to understand every word that's said to me or every word that I read. I'm a dyslexic. And so basically, I offer up this service to any dyslexics who are out there, for those who may feel a little different, for the Jewish dyslexic who may groan and say, yo, the dyslexic devil worshiper, now is your time to pray to Santa. Donna thought that it was inappropriate to have a cover that started out with such a joke on it, which many might and might not get the UUFNW part of it. So she printed up a mock cover, which she basically said was the like the textbook over the Mad magazine, and I agree with it. But unbeknownst to her, I see a joke in it, which is if you just take out the comma after my name, it becomes a directive and not a description. Thank you for noticing. I'll explain it later. The prelude today, which was played a little quietly for my taste, is called Please Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. There's a comedian. He was referred to as a comedian in his time, as Richard Lord Buckley. In today's reading, I'm going to read something he wrote. Richard Lord Buckley, it's probably the only time we're going to mention the Lord here, but Lord Buckley was born in 1906, and he died in 1960, and he was somewhat of what I would call a jazz speaker or a hip speaker, and he, you know, he would rewrite things like the Gettysburg Address, which we're all familiar with. He would say things like, four big hits and seven little licks ago, hour before daddy swung forth upon this sweet groovy land, a jumpin', wailin', stompin', swingin' new nation, hip to the cool, sweet groove of liberty. He was famous basically for rewriting many different pieces of literature, one of which my favorites is the Mark Antony funeral oration, which, as you know, his friends, Romans and countrymen, he rewrote as hipsters, flipsters, and all you finger-popping daddies, knock me your lobes. I came here to lay Caesar out, not to hip you to him. The bad jazz that a cat blows wails long after he's cut out. So that gives you a basic idea of Lord Buckley, and in researching what I thought would be appropriate for today, I found a piece that I think is an original writing of his called Religion. Please, flipped and grooved by this very, very gracious group of lords and ladies here at the Marquis de Moople's Traveling Palace of Joy, like I explained to you before, I'm a people worshiper. I think people should worship people. I really do. I went out looking for God the other day, and I couldn't pin him. So I figured if I couldn't find him, I'd look for his stash, his great lake of love that holds the whole world in gear. And when I finally found it, I had the pleasure of finding that people were the guardians of it. Dig that. So, with my 2 times 2 is 4, I figured that if people were guarding the stash of love known as God, then when people swing in beauty, they become little gods and goddesses. And I know a couple of them myself, personally. I know you do too. I think people should worship people. I like to worship something I can see, something I can get my hands on, get my brains on. I don't know about that Jehovah cat. I can't reach him. I don't know him. Seemed like every time I find myself in a bind, I always, nothing mystic came along to help me. Some man or some woman stepped up there and said, "We'll help you. We'll do this. We'll do that." That is the way, that's the way it looks to me. So recently, on the San Bernardino Freeway, I got hung up in an old junker car going to Las Vegas, Nevada, right in the middle of the freeway during rush hour. It conked out. Driving it. Got a weak clutch. What you doing? Let her in. Don't step on it. Oh, it was a madhouse. Like having lunch in the middle of the Indianapolis Speedway. About 3 days went by, and finally, along came God. There was two of them. There was a big God and a little God. They didn't know me from a. They pushed and they pulled. They tugged and they twisted. They yanked and they gave me every possible assistance in the whole world and finally got me on my way. Haven't seen them since. But I think that people, I hope I haven't offended anyone, anyone's religious belief, but I think that people should worship people. I really do. If you notice in your order of service, the chalice lighting and the unison affirmation are a little different. They say basically the same thing we're used to hearing said, just in a slightly different way. And with great courage, one of our coming-of-agers, Courtney Stein, is going to come up. She's going to light the chalice. She's going to start the chalice reading, and she's going to start the what we would otherwise call the unison affirmation, which today is the harmonious assertion, verification, and validation. Please rise as you are able, and just bear in mind, we will be on our feet for a little while now. This is the extent of our standing up and sitting down. It's going to take place all up front today, because we're going to go from this right into the fellowship greetings, curtsies and bows, we call them, and then there's going to be just a little bit of a warm-up before we sit down, and then there's going to be a kid story, but we'll sit after the hokey pokey. So at any rate, Courtney, light the chalice.
You know that
it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, "We can get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire." And now our affirmation.
The grandest
and most glorious of all emotions, that thing in our hearts for all generosity goes to grow, that union that brings us as humans closer together, is the wherewithal and the need of all, the raison d'etre.
Without judgment, to harbor as in the light.
now, if we could just stay in our places and turn to the people around us and give a curtsy, a bow, a hello, a how do.
Put your right foot
followed by
out,
your the right hokey pokey.
You shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
You put your left foot in, you put your left foot out. You put your left foot in and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
All right, now come on. You put your right hand in, you put your right hand out. You put your right hand in and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
You put your left hand in, you put your left hand out. You put your left hand in and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
All right, get ready now. You put your head in, you put your head out. You put your head in and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. And that's what it's all about.
You put your whole self in, you put your whole self out. You put your whole self in and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. And that's what it's all about.
Thank you. You may be seated. I just want to say that I just want to say the inspiration for that came when I heard a very intelligent person say maybe the hokey pokey is what it's all about. Okay, now, if we can get as many kids up front here, Amanda has a story. Thank you, Courtney. Thank you. Amanda has a story. Don't feel that, you know, just because you're a grown-up that you can't come up here, Graham. Thank you, Linda. Now, Amanda's going to try to read as loud as possible, but I'm going to be playing a part in this, too. Does she need a mic?
Thank you. Gerald McBoing Boing by Dr. Seuss. See if I can manage this. This might be a little hard.
I can help you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I know the deal.
This is the story of Gerald McCloy and the strange thing that happened to that little boy. They say it all started when Gerald was 2. That's the age when kids start talking, at least most of them do. Well, when he started talking, you know what he said? He didn't talk words. He went instead. "What's that?" cried his father, his face turning gray. "That's a very odd thing for a young boy to say." And poor Gerald's father rushed to the phone and quick dialed the number of Dr. Malone. "Come over fast," the poor father pled. "A boy can't speak words. He goes instead."
"I see," said the doctor. "It's just as you said. He doesn't speak words. He goes instead." "I've got no cure for this. I can't handle this case."
And he packed up his pills and walked out of the place. Then months passed, and Gerald got louder and louder, till one day he went like a big keg of powder.
Wow.
Yeah. It was then that his father said, "This is enough. He'll drive us both mad with this terrible stuff. A boy of his age shouldn't sound like a fool. He's got to learn words. We must send him to school." So Gerald marched off, an obedient creature. But soon he was back home with a note from the teacher.
"From Public School 7 to Mrs. McCloy. Your little son Gerald's a most hopeless little boy. We cannot accept him, for we have a rule that pupils must not go in our school."
Magic. Your boy will go, I'm afraid. All of his life, I'm afraid. Sincerely yours, Fanny Schultz, teacher, first grade. And little Gerald grew older. As little Gerald grew older, he found when a fellow goes, no one wants him around. When a fellow goes, he won't have any friends. For once he says, all the fun ends. Nya, nya, they all shout, your name's not McCloy. You're Gerald McBoing-Boing, the noise-making boy. And poor Gerald decided that he had no place at home, in the school, in the whole human race. And so he concluded that dear and forlorn, he would just disappear in the thick of the storm. But as he was boarding a slow-moving freight, a voice came from the darkness, called out, stop, boy, wait! Aren't you Gerald McBoing-Boing, the lad who makes squeaks? My boy, I have searched for you for many long weeks. I can make you the most famous lad in the nation, for I own the radio station. I need a smart fellow to make all the sounds, who can, like a dog, and like the hounds. Your is terrific. Your is inspired. Quick, come to McBoing-Boing, you're hired. Now his parents, proud parents, are able to boast that Gerald's is known coast to coast. Now Gerald is rich. He has friends. He's well fed. Because he doesn't speak words, he goes instead.
Okay, thank you, Amanda. Thank you, kids. Thank you, other kids. The choir is going to sing, and then if the choir could also just have the order of service with us, with them when they sing, because right after the choir sings, we're going to sing the children out, which the order of service has the proper words for. So, Rick, does this require any introduction?
Yes, we should tell them about all of them. The piece we're going to perform, the two pieces we're going to perform this morning are from the repertoire of P.D.Q. Bach. As it says in here, these are from the Art of the Ground Round and are of a type fancied by certain 16th and 17th century English composers. They reveal, when sung together as a round, levels of meaning that are not apparent when sung in parts individually. It says whether P.D.Q. Bach knew what he was doing or whether hidden meanings were accidental is a moot point.
Dog. time, sir, that portrait I see. If that's your daughter, present her to me. Look, her face could launch a thousand ships. Look, her face could launch a thousand ships. Thousand ships, thousand ships, thousand ships. Very well, it can be arranged. If you please, sit you down, make yourself at home. She'll be down in a jiffy. She's up dressing. She'll be down in a jiffy. Jiffy, jiffy, jiffy. Please, kind sir, that portrait I see. If that's your daughter, present her to me.
Regardless of what it says in the order of service, I take this next portion of our service seriously. There was a student who died this week very suddenly at the Blind Brook School. I believe Pat Compton may have known him. I believe that for the 1 billion Catholics on this planet, the passing of the Pope yesterday was a very sad and reflective moment. So I would like to take this moment to just break from our April Fool's service and have people come up and light candles of joy or sorrow in all seriousness.
I'm Linda McNeil, and this candle is for Jerry Morton. And if... blew into the mic as if that was going to... if you don't know, Jerry does need visitors. She needs calls, especially on Mondays and Fridays. And if you don't know Jerry Morton or want to know more about it, please contact me during the coffee hour.
Hi, I'm Katie Alberti, and I'm lighting a candle for Nanda Land, who's got the really horrible cold that went around and tends to stick with people for a month, only hers turned into pneumonia. She's at home taking her antibiotics faithfully, and she felt well enough to make the insert for the order of service. But I just thought you might wonder why she hasn't been around.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie Brandenburg, and I'm lighting this candle of hope for a friend of mine at work. His wife, Anne Marie, suffered from and suffers from a very rare form of cancer, and she went through very radical treatment, and they thought they had a little bit of time. They kind of sensed that it would probably resurface, but within 6 months it did, and she's very, you know, she's ill, very ill, and they believe in the power of prayer. So I asked if I could light a candle, and so if you can all hold Anne-Marie in your thoughts and prayers, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Rebecca Sala, DRE, has been in the process of studying and candidating for the UU ministry for the last several years, including a chaplaincy internship throughout this year at the same time that she was acting as our DRE. And on Friday, she went up in front of the, I don't know the name of this, the big board, the big committee that makes all the decisions about who's allowed to become a Unitarian minister. And she had the final exams, their oral exams that go on for like 3 hours where they grill you with all of these questions about theology and Unitarianism, and they all get very nervous and study a lot. And it's actually really hard, and people don't always pass. But Rebecca let me know that she actually passed on Friday with a 1, which is the highest score. So, you know, just a big candle of joy for Rebecca, which it now makes her ordainable as a UU minister. That was the final hurdle. So she's not here today with us, but I just wanted to light that candle and in big congratulations. And I'm sure that when you see her and congratulate her, that'll be a happy moment.
This is a candle for my wife Peggy's grandmother. She died, and Peggy was particularly close to her. She died this time of year, last year, and she went down to Florida for the unveiling, which I didn't know about being raised Catholic. The unveiling is when they die, they cover the tombstone in a veil, and then a year anniversary afterwards, they take the veil off, so she's down doing that, so.
I'm Susan Shore, and I would like to light a candle of joy for the fellowship, just in terms of, I haven't been here a lot lately, but these times that I have been here, it has been a lot of fun and a lot of energy and just different things that I've done recently with people from the fellowship and having to do with the fellowship have been exciting and different and again, this whole thing today is just another example of being creative and but hitting things true to home. So thank everybody, and I see a great future.
This is a candle of hope, probably beyond hope, that the next pope will have more compassion towards homosexuals and have more compassion towards women and people who choose to be different than what the Catholic Church is.
Okay, I'm going to light a final two candles, one for our family, our roof, and which only needed 2 buckets yesterday, but they seem to be growing in need. And for my car, which has got a new light flashing on it that's a little that at some point this year we can actually afford a car and a roof. And Susan, please don't use the words hit and home in the same sentence ever again around Donna. And for any joys or sorrows that may not have been shared today but are still important to us and in our hearts. So Harvey has agreed to... Did he leave? Thank you. Just looking for you. Harvey has agreed to read a piece called Inflationary Language.
Yeah, that's a long walk.
I like the clock here. Does the red light... Hi, my name is Harvey Zuckerman. For those of you that don't know me, for those of you who know me, well, okay. As most of you know, I've been an English teacher in the New York City public school system going on 2 years now. Could you believe it? There's been a change in the New York City English standards, as I'm sure most of you know. The change is that English teachers, and this is true, we now have to teach what's called across the content areas. In other words, because of the new standards, the English standards, the SATs, what have you, all the new tests, we have to teach English and teach them how to teach students how to write and how to read in not only in English but in social studies, in science, in math. And trying to teach kids how to read and math is very interesting, and it's but we do it. We do it. They have to figure out how to actually explain what they've done in real words, as opposed to just in pictures. So it's a real challenge. It's a real challenge, especially now with the new SAT. They added a 25-minute essay part to it, if you haven't heard. So for those of us that have taken the SATs years ago, when it was 1,600 points, it's now worth 2,400 points, because that part is 800 points. It's pretty tough. So there's a big challenge. But in so saying, in having to teach across the curriculum, one of the challenges was teaching in math, teaching English in math. Victor Borge, one of my idols, who you know is a virtuoso pianist, as well as a wordsmith, grammar smith, punctuation smith, I guess, wrote something many, many years ago, before he died. And it's called Inflationary Language. And I'm going to try my best to read it to you as well as I can. Most of you know that every few years we experience a period of inflation, and you're familiar with that problem. During inflation, numbers rise, prices go up, anything that has to do with money goes up, except the language. You see, in the English language, there are numbers hidden in the words. For example, wonderful, before, create, tenderly. Now, all these numbers should be inflated and meet the economy, you know, by rising to the occasion. I suggest we add one to each of these numbers to be prepared. For example, wonderful would be tutorful. Before would be B5. Create, crenine, tenderly, elevenderly. A lieutenant would be lutelevolent. A sentence like, I ate a tenderloin with my fork would be, I nine an elevenderloin with my five. And so on and so fifth. I have a story. Actually, I have a couple of stories, depending upon how much time I have, that I'd like to read to you so that you can get an idea of what's called inflationary language and how it sounds when it's being used. First one is a nursery rhyme. Jack and the Tutiful Beans. Once upon a time, there lived a boy named Jack in the tutiful land of Califivnia. Today, Jack, a double-minded lad, decided three go fifth, three seek his five tune. I'll give you little beats there. After making sure that Jack nine a sandwich and drank some eight up, his mother elevenderly said, three to loo, three to loo. Try to be back by next Thursday. Then she cheered, 3, 5, 7, 9, who do we appreciate nine? Jack, Jack, yay, Jack. Jack set fifth, and soon met a man wearing a four-piece suit and a three-pay. Fifth rightly, Jack asked the man, I'm a Califivnian, are you 2-3? Sir, elevenly, replied the man, off-fiving the high six. Any 2-5-11-ists? Any 2-5-11 is? Any 1-4-10 is? Not 3-day, answered Jack inelevently. But can you help me three-locate my 5-tune? To locate my fortune? All right. Sure, said the man. Let me sell you these tootiful beans. Jack's intuition told him that the man was a three-faced triple crosser. Eleventhly, Jack shouted, I'm not behind the nine ball. I'm a college graduate. And I know what rights our five fathers created in the Constitution. Now, let's get down 3-7 about these beans. The man tripled over with laughter. Now, hold on a third, he responded. There's no need three make such a three-do about these beans. If you like, I'll give them three you. Well, there's no need three collaborate on the rest of the tale. Jack oned in on the giant and two the battle for the golden eggs. His mother and he lived happily five ever after, and so on, and so on, and so fifth. That's the first story. Do I have enough time for the second? Good. Quick story. Another little fairy tale. And I'll read this one a little faster, so keep up with me. Twice upon a time, there lived in sunny California a young man named Bob. He was a third lieutenant in the U.S. Air Fives. Bob had been fond of Anna, his one-and-a-half sister, ever since she saw the light of day for the second time. And all three of them were proud of the fact that two of his five fathers had been among the crenators of the U.S. Constitution. They were dining on the terrace. Anna, he said as he took a bite of a marinated herring, you look tootiful, three-night. You never looked that lovely be-five. Anna looked tootiful, despite of the illness from which she had not yet recuperated. Yes, repeated Bob, you look tootiful, three-night, but you have three of the saddest eyes I have ever seen. The table was tastefully decorated with Anna's favorite flowers, three lips. They were now talking about Anna's aciton husband. From whom she was separated. While on the radio, an Irish 11-or sang T-5-3. It kind of rolls, you know. It was midnight. A clock in the distance struck 13. And suddenly, there in the moonlight, stood her husband, Don 2. Obviously intoxicated. Anna, he said, 5 give me. I am only young twice, and you are my 2 and only. Bob jumped to his feet. Get out of here, you three-faced triple crosser. But Anna warned, watch out, Bob. He's an officer. Yes, he is 2, but I am 2-3. All right, said Don 2 as he wiped his 5 head. He then left, and when he was 2 1/2 way through the revolving door, he muttered, I'll go back and be double again. Farewell, Anna. That's it.
All right. Time to scratch our itch. We know the glow from your flow will illuminate our buildings and strivings of our furnace. May it heal the wheel we all need to feel. And please listen closely to the words of the music. It's a woman named Camille West. The song is called I'm Dyslexic.
I was only 7 when I learned how to read. I got the education every child is guaranteed. We read around the classroom, the teacher hollered next. I was only comfortable when reading Hebrew text. I'm dyslexic, and I'm mad, D-A-M. Well, I met a guy named Otto. I loved him for his name. Backwards and forwards, it always looked the same. He took me to a musical. I gave him such a hug. I said, oh, what a great production of Annie, get your nook. I'm dyslexic, and I'm mad, D-A-M. Backwards, forwards, sideways, up and down and down and out. It's all so topsy-turvy, hell, it makes me want to shout. Is there anybody out there who could lift this mental fog? It's enough to get me on my knees and praying to my dog. Driving down the highway on a dark and stormy night, I hit the left-hand signal, of course I headed right. A cop gave me a ticket, what was even worse, when I went to pull away from him, I threw it in reverse. Well, Tish happens. Damn. Some folks say it's a handicap, but I think they're wrong, cause I get the backwards lyrics in those heavy metal songs. Internet connections and pet psychology, the timer on the VCR, all makes sense to me, cause I'm dyslexic. Hot damn. M-A-D. Yeah, I'm dyslexic. And I'm mad. D-A-M.
Hi, I'm Catherine Ward. I too am an English teacher in the public school system of New York. And now we're going to wonder about the literacy of our youth, I suppose. One of my greatest interests in teaching, actually, is the use of mythology and indigenous stories. I think that the instructional value of Terry Fails is just astonishing. And I have one that I particularly like. It exists cross-culturally. There's hardly a culture in the world that does not have this story in its own context. But I will give it to you in the context of the Northern European story with which I grew up. I guess because our background is sort of Northern European. I want you to listen for the moral of the story, too, because we should learn from our stories. Once upon a time, there was a gritty little pearl named Rindicella, and she lived with her two sugly sisters and a wicked mepstother. I'm sorry to tell you that they made her do all the wordy dirk. She had to wean the Clendos. She had to pine the shots and chans. She had to frub the sclores. And all she had to wear was a wordy drag. One day, there came from the king a proclamation. And it said that all the eligible young earls of the kingdom were to come to a Drancy fest ball and meet the prince in Hants. So that he could choose one of these eligible young earls to marry. Well, weren't the sugly esters excited? Oh, my, let's go, let's go, let's go indeed. But there was no such joy for Rindicella, for after all, she had no Drancy fest, but only a wordy drag. And you cannot go to a Drancy fest ball in a wordy drag. The day of the Drancy fest ball came, and the two sugly esters, accompanied by the wicked mepstother, went off to the Drancy fest ball and left Rindicella frying by the crier. Saul of a Nudden, there appeared her Gary Fod mother, who came down and said to her, Rindicella, cron't die. I can get you to the Drancy fest ball. And she whipped out her wand and went bing and turned the wordy drag into a Drancy fest. And then she brought Rindicella outside and said, now watch. And bing, she turned a pumpkin into a poach. And bing, she turned some heist into morses. And she said, now you can go to the Drancy fest ball, but we bear. For you must be back by the moke of Stridnight. Brenda Sella went to the Drancy Festival, and she and the Princom Hants pranced and pranced all evening, and Lel and Vav. But time passed, and the clock began to strike. It was the Moak of Stridnight. And Brenda Sella looked up, and she said, "A calf the hoe!" And so she dashed out of the ballroom and ran down the Stalas Peps, and on the very bottom step, she slapped her dripper. But she made it into the coach and made it home before the poach turned back into a Kumpkin and before the Morses turned back into Heiss. The Princom Hants followed her down the Stalas Peps, but of course all that was there by the time he got to the bottom of the Stalas Peps was the slopped dripper. And he was Bart Hroken. The next day, the king issued another proclamation, which said that every eligible young earl who had attended the Drancy Festival would try on the slopped dripper, and whomsoever it fit would marry the Princom Hants. So the messenger came house to house with the slopped dripper, and each eligible young earl tried it on until he got to the house of the two Sugly Esters, the Wicked Mupstother, and Rinda Sella. And, oh, well, the Sugly Esters practically knocked each other out of the way. Let me try. It's mine. And so the first one tried and tried to shove her foot in, but it fit and didn't. And the second one tried and tried to shove her foot in, but it fit and did. Brenda Sella said, "Let me try." So she did, and the foot slipped in because it fit it. So she and the Princom Hants were married and lived happily ever after.
Dyslexia is a beautiful thing. You know, I saw a joke on a men's room, right over the urinal one day. It said, "Dyslexics of the world untie." It's on the order of service. And I didn't get it for the longest time because I didn't see it the way that I was supposed to see it. And I think what little I understand about dyslexia is that it is a misfiring of the synapses in the brain so that we just hear things or see things a little bit differently. It takes a little bit of an extra effort to not blurt out, like, as if we had Tourette's syndrome, what it is we think we hear. But with Graham's help, I always heard, and with all due respect to Paul McCartney, I always heard Michelle as she smells. So Graham has graciously helped me to put together a version of this, and I believe that Harvey is going to be our horn solo. You can probably use the mic there. And now for another version of Michelle, or She Smells, Graham.
Smell. Michelle, you smell. I use Dial, extra strength and Prel, my Michelle. Michelle, you smell. These are birds that from the sky just fell because you smell. I love you, I love you, I love you. But don't take off your clothes until I hold my nose. Perhaps I'll put my hazmat suit on and get my tongs. Michelle, you smell. Someday European nuns might say you smell worse than they. You're toxic, you're noxious, you're noisome. I'm asking God for mercy. You smell like New Jersey. And now I've got to remember not to stand too downwind from Michelle. The New England Journal of Medicine said that in mind and body both, you will stunt children's growth, and your bathroom robe will, like Chernobyl, warp my DNA. My Michelle.
Okay, next in the order of service, we have something called useful signs, but in the interest of time, also in the order of service, we have something called the non-responsive reading. To keep sure that you're all still awake and alive, I will start, and you will read the italicized portions of the non-responsive reading. And I have to thank Linda McNeil for helping me find this intelligent piece of writing. The phenomenal power of the human mind, it doesn't matter. The only important thing, be in the right place, and you can still read it. This is because
the human mind is not needed at the right itself,
but the word is a whole.
Amazing, huh?
Yeah, and I always thought
so
I couldn't believe
that I could understand
what I was reading. Now, out of the mouths of babes, I was going to do a small portion of this program. Unfortunately, Pat Compton could not be here today. I was going to have her teach us all a little sign language. But in absence of Pat's being able to be here, my oldest son, Zach, came home from college one day and basically taught us two very useful signs in sign language, which you can use as you choose. I found one to be somewhat inspirational when I was in a small group of people, and somebody had must have eaten something that was not quite agreeing with them, and the aroma in the room wasn't quite what one might consider for polite company. And what Zach taught us basically was how to say it. Amanda, you might have to help me with this, but it's this. And the other one that he taught us, which was fairly useful, if you're ever in a business meeting and somebody's saying something that you don't fully agree with, but you don't want to come right out and speak to them like Howard Beale would have. Howard Beale was a character in a film called Network. Some of you may remember, in addition to him saying he was mad as hell and he wasn't going to take it anymore, there was another rather elaborate speech he gave, which had a bovine, male bovine fecal matter involved. And if you're in a business meeting, you're just sitting with your legs crossed and you just want to do this. How does it go? Oh, yeah. So that's how you can say that. You can do it subtly. And Amanda has one that she would have to show you, because I can't get it quite right. And
have a guess.
Yeah, guess at this one.
No one gets it. Okay. It's not. You guys might be thinking kind of dirty. It's not dirty, I swear. If you guys give up. Give up? Okay. Stop exploding my turtle. So I think that's very useful. Stop exploding my turtle.
That is the animal rights portion of our program. Now, we're going to... I have also here a printout. I can't read you this whole thing, but out of the mouths of babes, when kids were told to finish cliches, one kid said, when he heard the beginning, children should be seen and not, the kid completed it, spanked or grounded. So I want to thank everybody for giving me the opportunity to stand up here and have some fun. And we're going to close. There's going to be a musical meditation. Basically, there's a small piece of music which we should all sit and reflect on some of the lunacy that took place today and maybe some of the other things in our lives. And it will be followed immediately by the chalice extinguishing. And we should rise. When we hear the second piece of music, we should rise and sing along. The words are in the order of service. And I will be extinguishing the chalice by saying, well, I'll say it now because I don't want to interrupt the music, but hang with the flame of the cool and grooviest. Keep it alive while you strive to speak your jive. So we will reflect with the last two cuts, and we will stand for the last one.
Trails to you till we meet.